Oh, excellent. Spilled coffee on the outline already.
See you next week.
That's it. Yep. I can't perform under these conditions. 'Kay, hello and welcome to another episode of Two Hosers Photo Show, the Two Hosers Photo Show. This is Alan from Germany, and on the line I have Adam.
From Vancouver, Canada.
By the magic of Skype, we're able to record this. First things first, a little business. We have our new webpage up. twohosers.com. We have all the info you need to get a hold of us. We have our Twitter account, twohosers, is it at twohosers or just the twohosers?
I think it's twohosers at.
I think I hear a lot of people saying you can get in touch with me at blah, 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 but I didn't type in an at. I got to tell you, perhaps one of our listener can, fill us in on what that means, on what Twitter. I'm not very good at the Twittering.
I've never Twittered.
Not yet.
Twittered or tweeted?
I've heard both.
Yeah. My wife's laughing at me in the background because I said Twittered, because apparently I'm a nerd.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't know you were married to a 12-year-old Japanese girl.
It's a good thing she can't hear you right now.
Well, she's gonna. Probably not. Anyway, look for us at twohosers on the tweeting. We've got an email up, questions@twohosers.com for listener questions. Feel free to get in touch and give us feedback, positive or negative feedback. I'm in for some negative feedback.
Yeah, I love to
just
be bashed.
Not too much.
Yeah.
We're available. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. The link is on there as on our website as well. And also, if you want to subscribe to us with the RSS feed, which again, I'm not really sure what that means, but I did it anyways. If you have some podcatcher, I think is something, you want to subscribe to us on podcatcher. Basically, Adam, in case you're not aware of it,
Which I'm not.
Which you're apparently not, is you can just sit back and wait for the goodness of the podcast to flow into your computer without you doing anything.
I like that.
And that's what the RSS feed does, and that's sort of tied in with iTunes. And that's a lot of technical mumbo-jumbo, but we aim to cut through all that. That's the whole purpose of our show.
Beautiful.
Do you listen to any other podcasts?
No, I do not.
Wow, selfish.
I listened to the first two episodes of our podcast, and I was delightfully pleased, though.
Okay. Well, there are a couple other. I listened to a couple podcasts out there, which I highly recommend, actually. I don't get much in the way of radio over here in Germany, so unless I'm going to listen to the Armed Forces Network, which I'm not, probably. It's podcast for me. So I listened to a couple. I listened to the Adam Carolla podcast. So he gets an awful lot of downloads. So I don't think he needs our shout out, but he's doing all right. But another one I highly recommend. If you don't know who Doug Benson is, he's a comedian. He runs a podcast called Doug Loves Movies, and he's very funny. But put that on second and third on your list.
Sure. Sounds good. I like movies, too.
Just another little bit of housekeeping business. We're going to explain how the layout of the show. We're going to try to do two sections of listener questions. We're going to try to do questions about last week's show to try to clarify what we talked about.
Now, are these questions that people actually sent, or did you make these questions up and you're going to pretend that someone actually sent them in?
That's a good question there. I actually made that question up and told Adam to ask it. We've gone meta. No, these are actual. I was worried that I would have to make questions up, but we've actually got some listeners after the first show and have actually asked questions, actual listener questions.
Awesome.
Yeah. For instance, we have a question right here. Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to split the listener questions into two segments. So last show's recap at the beginning, at the end of the show, we're going to ask other questions, questions that aren't necessarily about the previous week's show.
Great.
So for instance, we have one about ISO, which last week's show was about ISO. And this question comes from Steve in Sydney. Steve asks, now I'm going to paraphrase this, but Steve asks, what is your favorite ISO? Now, what Steve really meant to say, that's what Steve meant to say, but Steve really was asking, what ISO should I stick with, generally? So I have a short answer for that. The short answer is 400.
And because?
400, well, it's a nice neutral. It's nice and neutral. If you're outside and you're shooting at 400, you're going to get, generally get a good picture. You can get away with it inside. And generally, that's where I like to start with is 400. But it leads me into a good tip. If you're going to, when you go to put your camera away in the bag, I always try to put my camera away in what I call a neutral setting. Meaning I don't like to leave it too obscure. So if leaving it on an ISO 1600 or something like that, so that if I go to grab it and start shooting right away, I don't have some kind of a weird setting on it.
Right.
I don't have some kind of a weird white balance setting set for some crazy light. Now I'm outside. I don't have an ISO of 1600 and I'm out in the sun and all of a sudden I got to stop and reset my camera before I shoot. So I put it away in all the rest of the settings, the daylight settings, we'll get into that later, of course. But I try to put the camera away at ISO 400 to avoid any errors later on. So Steve, that's my baseline is 400 ISO. And I work down to 100 if it's bright and sunny, and I work up to 1600 if it's inside and not so much light. What about you? Do you have anything that you start with?
I think I probably shoot the majority of my pictures inside, so I tend to probably leave it on 800 more commonly, but if I'm going outside, then probably the same. I just adjust down, but I think the bulk of my pictures are done inside, so hence the 800 ISO.
Excellent. I noticed now in some of your photos that early on, when I was looking at critiquing some of your outside photos, you're having trouble with the exposure, and it was because you would forget and leave the camera on 1600.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So it's nice. I see now, though, that it's something that you check really quickly. The first thing you do is dial it right down.
Yep.
So congratulations, Adam.
Thank you, yeah.
So what did you do this week, by the way? Let's talk about, I'll bet you probably took more photos than I did this week.
I probably did. I don't know how many you took, but I took lots, and no surprises that they were of the kids. We had a visit to my parents' house on the island, and so of course there was the token grandparents with grandchildren pictures, but tying a little bit into our ISO topic, we went to a bowling alley on Saturday, which is the first time out for bowling for the kids. And, of course, I thought it would be worthwhile to bring the camera along and see if I could get some pictures of an almost 2-year-old and an almost 4-year-old throwing balls that were a little too heavy for them to carry down a lane that's a little bit too long for them to propel them. So we had some fun. And the funny thing about it was a small little mom-and-pop shop bowling alley, and we got in there and the lighting was pretty decent. I was pretty excited, and about not exaggerating, 2 minutes in, and I just got the camera set up, a birthday party walks in of 6-7-year-olds, and they shut the lights down at 1 o'clock in the afternoon so that they can do the disco bowl. So I'm a little less than thrilled because now I'm shooting in complete darkness with the black lights on and everything glowing. And P.S. There's no setting on my camera that says disco bowling. So I was shooting in the black dark and at ISO 1600 with my flash engaged in super drive. I was trying to get something in the way of a reasonable exposure, but it's not easy in that lighting. That's for sure.
And I'm guessing the ceiling is not exactly low.
Well, actually, that was one saving grace, is that it wasn't where they were setting up and where they got the balls. It actually wasn't too bad. So I got off a few decent shots. But, of course, as it goes down the lane, the ceiling gets a lot higher. So you lose a lot of that lighting. So even at 1600, I mean, I got some, you get the foreground well lit and you get the background, which is very tough to light.
I saw some of those pictures, actually, and they look really good. Really, really well done. You might actually consider yourself lucky, because if you had the sodium vapor or the whatever lights, the fluorescent lights that they have, if they'd stayed on, you would have got some funky colors.
Yeah.
Mixed in with your flash, because they're not the same color, your flash and regular lighting. So it might have accidentally made you work harder, but done you a favor in the process. And the fall off wasn't so bad, because that's the first thing I sort of notice with flash pictures is how the fall off, the background falls in the dark as you get further away from the light source. And you did a good job of that. So once again, congratulations.
Thank you.
So
what about yourself, though? What about yourself from a picture taking weekend?
I think I took four pictures this week, and they're all of me, the ones you see on the website. That's pretty much what I did. It's been pretty cold here in Germany and kind of lousy weather, and I haven't been exactly motivated to go outside and shoot in this, and thus haven't really taken too many, sorry guys, haven't taken too many pictures. Part of it too, though, is that, when you do it for a living, and you go out, you know, let's say, look, for you, for instance, at the end of the day, you put in a good solid work day, and then you go to a party. The last thing you want to do is paint people's toenails or whatever it is that you do for a living, Adam.
Right, yeah.
But you don't want to go to the party and do physiotherapy.
Correct.
So generally, that's kind of how it goes for me, is sometimes when I go to someone's house or something, I kind of just want to not do my job. And so it ends up being like that, or every time that someone needs a picture taken, even if it's just with their little point and shoot, they'll hand you the camera. Alan, you can take it. Excellent. Kind of eating right now. But so, long story short, too late. I didn't take that many pictures this week, but I will this week. I'll make an effort to go out and take some pictures.
I did notice that you did follow through on your promise and take the pictures for the ISO demonstration that was posted, and I thought that was helpful. So you did take a few pictures anyways.
That's true. That's eight. Sorry, you're correct. I took those four as well. Let's move on to some photo stuff. So we're going to do a quick review of what we learned last week. What did we learn last week, Adam?
We learned about ISO.
Can I interrupt for a sec?
Sure.
Did I just sound like the condescending teacher to the grade 6 class? What did we learn last week, Adam?
I don't think so. I didn't take it that way.
Okay, I'm going to leave that in anyway.
All right.
Just to let you know that I wasn't trying to sound condescending.
Oh, no worries. I didn't take it that way. But we learned about ISO and that it is a setting on your camera that is pretty cool that we have it, because it allows us to adjust for the sensitivity of the light that hits the sensor in our cameras.
Fantastic. And a lower number is what?
A lower number is better for, it means that you're going to make the sensor less sensitive to light, so better for shooting in situations where you have lots of light, like during the daytime.
Can I try another quick analogy?
Sure.
Okay, I think this makes more sense. When the ISO is low, like a 100, and very low sensitivity, low sensitivity to light. To me, it's like a guy who's a sketch artist. And when it's low ISO, it's 100, he takes his time. And he takes his 10 minutes and he draws a really good picture. But under certain conditions, when the ISO is really high, like 1600, he does a quick sketch. And still, it still looks like you, but all the exact little details aren't exactly quite there.
I like it.
Does that make sense?
Yep, makes perfect sense.
Been working on that for a week. No, that's not true. So that's what ISO means. And hopefully you've been out shooting in your P mode, program mode, we decided that stood for. And you've gone out and shot in that. And program mode, what is program mode again?
Basically, it chooses the shutter speed and the aperture for you, and you choose the ISO.
Perfect. Perfect. And again, P mode, I shot in P mode for about a week when I got the camera because I was told to, actually. And I wasn't told to as a temporary measure. I was told, oh, no, you shoot with program mode. I mean, it does everything for you. But ultimately, you want to move on. You want to shoot in P mode temporarily and move on to AV mode, which we're going to get to today. And that leads us into explaining what is aperture. And not the software program. What does aperture mean in photography?
You want me to answer that question?
Sure. What is aperture, Adam?
Well, I think the definition that I kind of came up with, which I'm, again, really, really trying to simplify it for people, but basically if we go back to the ISO having to do with how sensitive the sensor is to light, then we can look at aperture as basically the light that reaches the camera sensor has to do with the size of the opening in the lens. So the aperture basically is the hole in the lens that allows light into the sensor, I think is as simple as I was able to make that.
Perfect. That's exactly what it is. Aperture is the size of the hole. Now, another analogy, because that's my thing. Let's say you puncture a hole into a tin can and fill it full of water. And then the water then drips out through that hole. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
A small hole, you're going to get just a little bit of water coming out. You puncture a big hole, the water's going to come gushing out. That's what aperture is. Aperture is the size of the hole that lets the light in. Now, there's a lot of technical stuff around that. We aim to cut through that. But one of the really confusing things about aperture is how we measure it and how we define it. Because you don't say, hey, I shot this picture at aperture 8. You call it, what do we call it?
F-stops.
You know?
We call it F-stops.
F-stops. And that's how you get to sound like the real pro. Is when you talk to people and say, "Oh, what's the f-stop?" But you want to actually go even further and be a real pro. What are you shooting that at? That's how we say that. Oh yeah, what are you shooting at? And then you know, oh yeah, yeah, it's a 2.84 split. That's how you can tell. Aperture is essentially the reason we come up with these numbers is aperture is the relationship between the length of the lens. Focal length, not really the lens, but you get the idea. The length of the lens divided by the opening of the lens.
Right.
The diameter. So how far open does it go versus how long it is. And that's how we get these numbers, the f-stops that you know, 2.8, 4, 5, 6, 8, 11, and so on. It's a relationship between those two things. And that's why we have the actual measurements.
And it's one divided by the other, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So it's the length of the lens divided by the diameter of the opening. And that's where the numbers come from. And I don't know how important it is to know all that when you're shooting, but to understand what happens later, this is the part that most people that I've worked with find really confusing, is that a small number means a larger hole.
Right. Which makes sense if you under that it's the focal length divided by the size of the opening.
When your kids are running around on the swings and that's all you can think about is the ratio between the focal length and the size of the opening, I'm sure. I don't think you need to know that. I think you need you want to know it and forget it, just so that these numbers make sense to you. Because I found that without some sort of a relationship, without some sort of a without understanding that, people tend to forget little number, big hole. Big number, little hole.
Yeah.
So, anyways, how did you remember it? How did you, when you first started shooting in AV mode and dealing with aperture, how did you remember that relationship?
I remembered that the lower number equaled a blurrier background.
So you skipped ahead a little bit. That's the big question I'm always asked. The first question I am always asked by people who get a new camera, how do I make the background blurry?
Yeah, and that's one of the first things I wanted to know.
That is, I'm not making fun of you.
No,
it's true. It's the truth.
That's the
big separation between your little point and shoot camera and the digital SLR is the one big difference is something we call depth of field, which is the blurry backgroundness. Blurriness of the background.
Yeah.
And so one of the factors, there's a couple of factors involved in blurry background, but one of the factors is aperture.
And it's a pretty big factor, is it not?
It is definitely a big factor. It's absolutely one of the major, I'm going to say it's the major factor is the aperture. Now, what does that mean? Maybe give us a little explanation about what that means.
Which the depth of
field? I want a blurry
field?
Background. Yeah, I want a blurry background in my picture. What do I do? Aperture-wise,
you would set it to the lowest setting, the lowest number. So depending on your lens, it might be 1.4, it might be 1.8, it might be 3.5. But depending on the type of lens you're using and whether it's a prime lens or a zoom lens, you want to set it to that low number and probably set it to the AV mode so that you don't have to worry about the other parameters when it comes to shutter speed or anything else. But I would basically set it to AV mode, put the aperture to the lowest number, and then, you know, target what you want to be in focus and try to leave as big a separation as possible between your subject and your background, and then you'll get
Let's not skip ahead.
Sorry.
Adam's skipping way into episode 9. And then end episode 15 with the whole zoom versus prime. Wow. You confused me for a second there.
How about you simplify it?
I don't know if I can simplify it, but the bottom line, you want a blurry background, you want to open up your lens as wide as you can. You want to have everything in focus, deep focus. You stop your lens down as far as you can.
Which means a big F number.
Big F number, something like a 16 or a 22, depending on your lens. But something like a 16 or a 22 is a very tiny hole, which optically means everything, almost, is going to be in focus. So there's certain times when you want that, when you want, let's say you're shooting your kids playing soccer and you want to get a shot of your kids with the goalie in the background or whatever it is that they do, that's when you want to have an F16. And so that they're in focus, the goalie's in focus, the mountains in the background are in focus. Or sometimes you want to get a shot of just Sarah and make sure the focus of the picture, everyone's looking at just her. So now we want to shoot that at a f2.8, for instance, a very large hole, and now she'll be in focus, but the girl 2 feet behind her, I'm sorry, 1 meter behind her in Canada and in Germany. We use the metric system here as well.
Awesome.
So the girl 1 meter behind her is going to be out of focus. So that's a large f-stop. That's not the only thing that aperture controls, though. What else? I mean, we talked about it quickly. Aperture also controls how much light is coming in. And when we talked earlier about ISO, and the next episode is going to be about something called shutter speed, these are the three things that are involved in the so-called exposure triangle, which sounds a lot more complicated than it is. But in order to make a proper exposure, we have to let a certain amount of light in. Now, in order to do that, we have to determine how much light is coming in and how long we're going to let it come in. Next week, we'll talk about shutter speed, but for now, we want to talk about how much light is coming in at once. Now, obviously, a larger hole, a whole lot more light's going to come rushing in.
Mm-hmm.
A smaller hole, it's going to dribble in like the can that we talked about with the small puncture hole in it. That's the difference. So that's what aperture controls, is the two things, how much light comes in at once and how in focus everything in the background is. And now as a hint, a teaser towards future episodes, not all lenses are created equally. Some lenses have a much larger maximum aperture, or what does that mean in other words, in plain English?
Have the ability to allow more light in because they have a wider maximum hole range.
Okay, I'll make it even plainer than that. Some lenses open wider than others. It's that simple. Now, as you can imagine, opening wide is a good thing. Ergo, which is a fancy word for therefore, I think. Therefore, they're more expensive. So the cheaper kit lens that came with your camera,
yeah,
probably isn't going to open very wide. And I'm guessing, I don't know yours, the kit lens is 3.5 or 4 maybe?
It's 3.5, but it's variable. So 3.5, right.
That's episode 14.
Yeah, 3.5.
So it doesn't open very wide.
Correct.
I mean, 3.5 is not bad, but compare that to your prime lens, which I promise, again, we will get into, but you have another prime lens that you shoot with normally.
Yeah, and that's a 1.8.
What is that open to?
1.8.
Okay. Now, the good news is that that also lets in a lot of light. In fact, 1.8, let me do the quick math on that. 1.8 generally lets in about 6 to 8 times more light than the 3.5 does. So keep that in mind again, if you're still listening, in 13 episodes. So now really, really quickly then, if we're going to now understand what aperture means, wouldn't it be nice if there was a way that we control that? That we can set the aperture instead of, like, say, program mode or P mode, which picks a sort of a middle-of-the-road aperture for us and then assigns a middle-of-the-road corresponding shutter speed. Because remember, we have to determine how much light comes in at once and how long we let that happen. So the camera sort of picks two that match, and they're kind of in the middle, and nobody gets hurt, and it's, you know, it's basically good vanilla ice cream. It works out just fine. Now, but if we want to set the aperture ourselves, how would we go about that?
That's where we would set it to the, if you're using a Canon, it's the AV mode. I believe on the Nikon, it's just an A mode, which stands for aperture priority mode. So you set the aperture.
Also known as the mode I shoot in almost all the time.
Me too.
Pretty much my weapon of choice, is my setting of choice, is AV mode. Now tell us what you do when you shoot in AV mode. What does that mean? What do you do?
So I set the aperture to what I desired, whether it's a fully in focus background or a blurry background. So if I'm shooting my young child and I want them to be the focus of the picture, then I'll set it to a 2.0 or 2.8, and then the shutter speed is selected automatically by the camera. I also have the ability to select the ISO, and then I take my picture.
Wonderful. So, for instance, now that we're shooting in AV mode, we've graduated in 1 week. We've gone from P now over to A or AV, depending on your camera. Now you can go out again. You can prepare to fail because it's not going to be as easy as you think. There's other factors that are going to come in that are going to wreck your pictures, but don't worry about it. That's normal. Because sometimes you'll get out there and you'll pick the aperture that you think you want, and the camera will laugh at you and shoot it at a half of a second shutter speed, and you'll get no picture. That's okay. And it's snowing again. Little aside, fun fact for the kids, it's snowing in Germany. I've done that. I've done that with the shutter speed, where all of a sudden I go and line up a good picture and boom, now it's all blurry. So don't be afraid to do that. Don't be afraid to make that mistake, especially the first week. I'm talking to you, Adam.
I won't be afraid.
So now that this week, going forward, I would like all of our listener to go try AV mode. Set your ISO to whatever it is that you want, and now dial in your aperture and just try different things. Don't worry about getting great pictures. Just go ahead and fire away and see what happens. Okay, well, that brings us to the second set of listener questions. Now, I did this next one isn't technically a listener. He did email me the question. He hasn't listened yet. He will listen. I don't know how good his English is. This one comes from Jens in Germany, who asks me, and this is a true story. What kind of camera should I buy?
Wow. Kind of answered that last week, didn't we?
We did mention it, but I don't think we mentioned it because that normally you ask a pro guy that question, what kind of camera should I buy? Well, that depends on what blah blah blah. No. What kind of camera should someone buy? If someone has to ask that question, what kind of camera should I buy? There's a simple answer.
What is it?
Waiting to hear your. It's your camera. Buy the Canon
Rebel XS.
Buy a Canon Rebel XS. In Europe, it's called the 1000D. In Japan, it's called Kiss something or other. But buy the Rebel XS. It is almost free.
Yep.
It handles all the lenses that Canon makes. And you can't go wrong with that. 10 megapixels, I think.
Yep.
Yep. So there you go, Jens. That's the answer. Buy it. You won't be upset. It doesn't have video, which you don't want. You think you want it. They tell you you want it. Yeah. You probably don't want it. So don't worry about that. Just go out there and get a camera that's good at taking pictures, and that's what it is. Okay, that's the end of the second section of listener questions.
Feel free to send your questions to us.
How would I do that, Adam?
I believe there's a link on the twohosers.com website for listener questions. So anybody that's interested in having their questions answered in the next episode, feel free to send them.
Absolutely. Send them in there to our email account. Feel free to send them via Twitter if you can ask your question in 140 characters or less, which, P.S., that would be awesome. So tip of the week, I have a tip this week. With the what could best be described as inclement weather conditions, do yourself a favor and take a plastic bag with you, a Ziploc or some sort of a sealable bag, when you go to shoot. Now, I wrote about this on the blog a couple of weeks ago or a month ago or something like that, which you can find. Again, you can find on our website. There's a link over to the blog that accompanies the podcast. But this isn't for why you think. This isn't to protect from the rain. This isn't for any other reason. When you're outside and let's say it's 0 degrees, your camera gets cold, your camera can handle that. But when you come back in the house and as it warms up, it's going to attract moisture, which, P.S., you don't want. When you're outside, on your way in the house, take your cold camera, put it in the Ziploc bag, and seal it shut. Try to get as much air out as you can, and seal it shut. And then when it comes inside and it warms up, the moisture will hit the will collect on the outside of the plastic bag and not your expensive electronics.
Good tip. I use that tip. You gave that tip to me a while ago.
I normally use it myself, except for sometimes I have the really long 70 to 200 mil lens and I got to carry a big plastic bag around with me, but better than buying a new camera. So that brings us to the end of episode 3, the aperture episode. Where can we find you, Adam?
My wife has actually just registered her blog at her own website, which is the schwartzchronicles.com. So there's no the, just schwartzchronicles.com. And most of the pictures there, all the good ones anyways, were taken by myself. If you see a crappy picture, chances are my wife took it on a point and shoot. So don't blame me for any pictures that are poor. Either that or they were taken in poorly lit bowling alleys. So
hopefully by the time you hear this, we're going to have a full bio page of Adam. You can read about Adam and click over to his wife's blog, which I highly, highly recommend reading, by the way. And I'm a dude, and it's about mom stuff.
Yeah. Thanks for the endorsement, though. I'm pretty sure she's not looking for you as the target audience, but thanks for the endorsement. I'll pass that
along.
She's
getting some crossover.
Yeah.
She's definitely getting some crossover. I also like to find out what your kids are doing, though. So there's that. And check out your pictures, which is actually, no, all kidding aside, I actually do like to check out all the pictures that you've taken of the kids. And you do a good job of editing them down for the blog, too.
I'm getting better at that.
And you can find my personal website that has my portfolio for photography and some videos I've made, some films I've made, and some behind-the-scenes documentary over at alanattridge.com, or for our German listeners, alanattridge.de. And of course, you can find both of us, as always, at twohosers.com. So until next time, this is Alan Attridge for Adam Schwartz, telling you to go make some better pictures.